From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, May 21st, 2026. A federal judge has thrown out the Trump administration's lawsuit that would have forced Maine to turn over voter data to the federal government. Secretary of State Shanna Bellows says Thursday's ruling is the latest defeat for the Department of Justice, which has sued 30 states to gain voter information.
Today's ruling is incredibly exciting. It affirms that the states, not the federal government, are in charge of our elections. Of course, we know that because the Constitution and the law have been on our side from the very beginning.
The Trump administration sued Bellows last year after she refused to turn over voter rolls. That included sensitive information, including driver's license numbers, birth dates, and partial Social Security numbers. The leader of the group Protect Girls Sports in Maine plans to challenge a finding that could keep their referendum on transgender athletes off the November ballot. Maine's chief deputy secretary of state is recommending the invalidation of more than 12,000 petition signatures filed by the group because of multiple issues. That would leave the group short of the number it needs to qualify for the ballot. But Leyland Strife says the group isn't giving up.
Protect Girls Sports in Maine is reviewing the recommended decision closely. We are continuing our defense of the Protect Girls Sports ballot measure, and we'll be filing our objection to the recommended decision before the May 23rd deadline.
The proposed ballot initiative states that only athletes who were born female would be allowed to compete on girls' teams in Maine, and require separate locker rooms, restrooms, and showers for male and female students. Several hundred people gathered in Portland today to remember and celebrate the life of Maine civil rights leader Gerald Talbot. Donna Loring of the Penobscot Nation says the Wabanaki people watched as Talbot was elected Maine's first black state legislator in the early 1970s.
Jerry provided the spark that ignited hope among the Wabanaki people. Hope that maybe we too could break free from the cycle of poverty, exclusion, and state control that had defined so much of our history.
Loring was among several state leaders, friends, and family members who spoke of Talbot's legacy as a mentor, black history advocate, and human rights defender. Talbot passed away earlier this month at age 94. In Bangor, meanwhile, hundreds of law enforcement officers, supporters, and family members filled the Cross Insurance Center today to celebrate the life of game warden pilot Joshua Tibbetts, who died in a plane crash last week. One of his two daughters, Allison, remembered her dad as adventurous and curious, always ready to crack a joke or offer a piece of advice. It's those little things, she said, that she'll miss the most.
What made this loss so hard is knowing there should have been more time, more talks, more adventures, more ordinary moments that you never think could disappear.
Tibbetts, an 18-year veteran of the Warden Service, was stocking fish in western Maine before his plane crashed in the town of Avon, according to the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. He was 50 years old. Independent Senator Angus King is objecting to the State Department's plan to issue special passports featuring a picture of President Trump. In a letter to Secretary of State Marco Rubio today, King and four Democratic senators say U.S. passports have never featured an image of a sitting president, and that doing so to promote the country's 250th anniversary risks, quote, turning a unifying national milestone into a vehicle for personal promotion. The letter asks Secretary of State Marco Rubio to reconsider the plan, which the senators say could result in unnecessary costs to taxpayers. Nearly 200 firefighters from over 40 departments responded to the deadly blaze at Robbins Lumber last week in Searsmont. Most of them, including those hospitalized with injuries, were volunteers. Volunteer fire crews are common in rural communities, but as Michael Livingston reports, they're struggling with recruitment.
Moments after the massive explosion at Robbins Lumber, the scanner channel for Waldo County Dispatch came alive.
There's been a huge explosion. The silo just exploded. Multiple firefighters injured and burning.
First responders can be heard urgently requesting help.
How many injuries do we have?
Oh, at least 10, if not more. A lot of people with third degree. This is a big explosion. Multiple fire trucks are burning.
Need to treat this as a mass casualty incident. Take the two towns that are standing by.
That's the worst absolute call you ever want to hear. It means people are in peril.
Chief Bill Gillespie of the nearby Liberty Volunteer Fire Department says he got in a truck and rushed to the scene. On the way, Gillespie and his wife, who also serves as deputy fire chief, were trying to reach other volunteers.
We were making phone calls en route to the scene, trying to see if anybody was around, because at 11 o'clock on a weekday, we're very limited in capacity.
That's because everyone who volunteers in Liberty works another job. According to data from the state fire marshal, 94% of Maine fire departments rely on some degree of volunteerism, but the number of new volunteers has sharply declined in recent decades. Recruiters say there are a number of contributing factors. One is the amount of time it takes to become certified.
When I came on board, I could go into a burning structure in 1970. Today, you've got to get at least 85 to 100 hours worth of training before you can see a live fire.
Ken Desmond is president of the Maine State Federation of Firefighters. He says the stricter training requirements reflect the multiple roles that departments play in emergency and rescue services. Firefighters are expected to handle hazardous materials, investigations, and sometimes administer medical care.
Today, you've got to let these firefighters know what is expected of them, what they might see when they respond, because all fires are different, obviously.
Tightening municipal budgets have also made it difficult for small fire departments to buy new equipment or host trainings. But other veterans of the profession say there are any number of ways that volunteers can give their time to local fire departments.
I have people come up and say, "Oh, I don't want to go into a fire. I don't want to fight fires. I can still use you. I can use you with traffic control, any of that stuff."
Chief Ron Harford of Belmont Volunteer Fire Department says volunteers of any age and skill level are welcome.
I have some older people in town that said, "Yeah, I'd love to help out, but I can't." Well, you can, because we do fundraisers, and that helps.
Harford's volunteers were among those on the scene as the silo at Robbins Lumber exploded. The blast put volunteer firefighter Catherine Page in Maine Medical Center with severe burn injuries. She's still in recovery. 27-year-old Andrew Cross of the neighboring Morrill Volunteer Fire Department was killed in the explosion.
It was my second May Day in 38 years, and it resulted in a lot more chaos and trauma than anything I've ever experienced.
Liberty Chief Bill Gillespie says despite the risks, all three of his sons are certified firefighters. One started at 16 and has put in more than 20 years as a volunteer. He says the only real requirement for volunteering is a desire to serve one's community.
These people don't consider themselves heroes. They truly were. Sometimes you just see us waving the parade, but there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that get these people prepared to do the heroic efforts that they make.
Trainings are offered through an organization called the Maine Fire Service Institute. Gillespie says those interested could also contact their local fire hall. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Michael Livingston.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 tomorrow morning, a primary election preview. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.